being a banker for 21 years almost.
That's okay. It's going to fuel you. It's still, I think, fueling me to this day.
Somebody that's a little bit bored should be waiting a long time. So people are just going to have to roll up their sleeves.
Try to make sense of it because there's so much information coming in and you don't know what's relevant and what's not.
The corporate world for 4 years as a CEO.
I'm not interested in having this small probability of losing a whole lot of money.
You need to be surrounded by other smart people.
Got me through the door because it's a pretty small group and it's
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Maura Maya. Welcome to another episode of the Finance Podcast, where I explore the professional journey of individuals who have successfully built careers in the financial industry. This episode is particularly interesting as we will be talking about COVID-19 and its effect on markets and how this will all play out. My guest this week is Shal Yeo. Shal has over 20 years of experience in institutional equity sales, 8 years with Morgan Stanley, and 16 years with Bank of Montreal and Credit Suisse. He worked from different locations, amongst them Montreal, Toronto, and New York. Shal joined Morgan Stanley in 2013 as the relationship manager for Quebec-based institutional accounts, specifically all the significant pension funds, mutual funds, and insurance companies like CDPQ, PSP, Fiera, and CN Investment Trust. He works in the equity division and regularly interacts with the investment banking division. Shal's main task is to advise large institutions on their investments and to make sure they buy or sell stocks at the right price. In 2021, Shal will take on an additional responsibility within Morgan Stanley by collaborating on the expansion of ShareWords, a new Morgan Stanley division that offers intuitive solutions that help realize the full potential of stock plan compensation. It is a customizable solution for companies to empower their employees by making their finances a wellness source. Mr. Yeo earned a Bachelor of Business Administration from UQAM and continued his studies at McGill University. Shal is the father of three teenagers and enjoys practicing various sports in his free time, especially cycling, which he excelled at a younger age. So please enjoy my conversation with Shal Yeo. Hi, Charles. How are you? Thank you for being on the podcast here today. It is an absolute pleasure to have you.
Hi, Maura. Pleasure to be on that call. I think it's a great initiative on your end.
Perfect. So I want to get right into it. And before we get into understanding your day-to-day role as executive director for Morgan Stanley's Institutional Equity Sales Division, I would like to discuss your story. How does it all start?
Yeah, listen, my story, I don't want to say it's boring, but I come from a middle-class family in Montreal, the northern part of Montreal near Cartierville, born, raised, educated in a French environment. I went to a French elementary school, where I ended up skipping third grade. Not necessarily good, I would say, because, you know, you're always the youngest, the shortest of your class. On the other hand, it kind of gave me a kickstart though, okay? Just so you know, while I was studying, I start working at an early age, delivering newspaper, I was 8 years old. But by the age of 12, I already saved like $2,000. And that was in 1982. My mother told me to put those savings into government bonds. But in 1982, it was 18%. So one of the best advice my mother gave me, because it gave me 5 years later, a very interesting sum of money, which provided me independence and freedom. So very early, I start working, had those investments made. I was very involved in sports, competitive sports, name it, hockey, cycling, baseball, rowing, golf, very, very into sports. Competed at a high level in cycling as well. But what's interesting to note is saving money early in my life gave me that freedom. So throughout my entire studies, I traveled a lot. Now, before I even graduated from UQAM, I traveled 4 different continents, 25 countries, in different contexts. It was either backpacking a trip in Southeast Asia, Central or South America. And I've done things like competing high level for a full summer in Europe, representing the national team in international races in Japan. I even went windsurfing in Oregon for a full summer after tree planting in BC. So I wanted to open my horizon because I think, you know, it was interesting to meet other people. And that was very, very grateful. So I'm very proud to have done all these things at a young age, because when you look at investment today, they're all being done in a global context. So that was very helpful, hindsight.
Fantastic. And then moving forward into today, how did you break into finance and get your foot through the door?
To be honest, there's a little bit of luck, trial and error. When I graduated with a business administration degree from UCAM, I did not know. I applied to all kinds of different jobs. I was getting interviews, but I was never get offered a job, okay? And so I did some contractual work for consulting firms here and there, nothing too important. And it's through my network that I was able to find a job. My first job was at Deloitte Touche in insolvency and M&A. And it's a person that I knew through cycling. And so that's how I got to the job. And they wanted me to do accounting courses. And that's where I decided to join McGill and do a few more classes. And that was actually quite interesting. So it started with Deloitte Touche, but to be honest, we weren't that busy, okay? And it was kind of boring. So I stayed quite involved with different stuff. Like I decided to be a member of the Jeune Chambre de Commerce de Montréal. So it's always good to build your network, and you never know what's going to happen down the road. I also actually bumped into a friend who was organizing cycling races and decided to partner with him. So I thought after 9 months with Deloitte Touche that it was more fun to organize special events. So I quit Deloitte Touche and actually started my own business. But to be honest, you don't make a great living organizing special events. And the winter times were a little bit more kind of quiet. I saw an ad in the paper, the Montreal Exchange was offering a traders training program and the opportunity to have an internship with the brokerage firm. I applied, got picked up, and that's where it all started for me. So the first job was an internship on the Montreal floor. At that time, we were trading derivative products on interest rates. So kind of interesting because it would still open outcry at that time. So when you think it's kind of obsolete when you think about it today, but it was a great experience. But to be honest, to trade derivative products, okay, is not necessarily the most fun things because you're wait for economic data. I wanted to feel and he listened to some stories and I thought equity was much more interesting. There's always a story behind an investment. There's always people to build up those companies. So I decided to switch to the equity components, apply to a CIBC. And just to give you a little story of how the interview was conducted, it was in December of 1998. And it was a big snowstorm in Montreal. Okay, and the following day, the day of the interview, it was a nice, gorgeous day. The people I was meeting at CIBC were flying from Toronto to Montreal. So I called in the morning, talked to the assistant and say, hey, I have an appointment at 10 o'clock, my interview. I will cancel it. I'm going skiing today. And I hung up. I called back 10 minutes later. I said, hey, just joking, just to confirm I'll be there at 10 o'clock. But this is an example of how you need to differentiate yourself. Okay, maybe my sense of humor captured their attention. And, you know, down the road, I end up getting the job. And what, 22 years later, I'm still doing that same job, which was at that time, institutional equity sales trading. So that's how it all started. And to be honest, Mara, that was actually a very, very interesting, you know, job at that time. There wasn't that much opening, but this job allowed me to travel to different parts of the world, conferences in India, China. We end up meeting great people, successful business person. I've actually worked out of New York with Credit Suisse. I've worked out of Toronto with Morgan Stanley. So all kinds of great experiences.
Fantastic. So thank you for sharing that with us. But I do want to get into what you do on your day-to-day. So what is a day in institutional equity sales look like? What does your role entail?
Okay, it might sound boring, unfortunately, because our day-to-day is a very same routine, okay? The stock markets open at 9:30 and close at 4 o'clock every day. Okay. But you know, what makes our job interesting is that the market is continuously evolving. And that's where kind of capture your attention. You're trying to dissect the market, trying to understand, and you're trying to be right. And you're never going to be right all the time. But you know, my day starts around 7 o'clock in the morning. We have a morning meeting where all the research analysts within our firm will funnel the information and we'll try to capture what we believe might be important for our clients. So my day-to-day job is to package the information I receive from different experts within my organization and funnel that to my clients the most creative way, because I compete with many other brokerage firms. So I need to find a ways to capture their attention. Their retention span is very small because they do have their own analysts within their firm. So working for Morgan Stanley is actually quite good because you got such depth and global expertise that, you know, it's easier to capture the attention. So by 7 o'clock, we have that morning meeting. I capture the information and then it's either emails, chat. No, the market has evolved over time. In the past, it used to be fax and phone call, but with COVID, we're all working remotely. So you have to find ways to capture their attention and funnel the right information. So that's my day-to-day task. But I also book meetings with corporate CEOs, CFOs. I invite clients to participate to some of our conferences. I conference them with our analysts to make sure they got all the proper information. And usually by 4 o'clock, we also are quite involved with financing. It's usually at that time that we'll have announcement of companies raising money to do a financing because they're acquiring another company, or there's IPOs that we need to sell throughout the day as well. And I must say, these days are quite similar to the early 2000s. We're seeing tons of IPOs these days. So this is more or less, you know, what I do on a daily routine.
So I do want to rip up the script and deviate from the structure that we had for this conversation and ask a question. You mentioned we're seeing levels of information at the same as the 2000s level. How do you choose what to funnel to your clients? How do you break the noise of all that information coming to you?
Yeah, so this is crucial because otherwise you won't retain the attention of your clients. Having worked for the last 20 years in this business, it's sometimes good because I can help the younger individual in the business. But also I do share, you know, these information with people who's been in the business as long as I've been in the business. So the goal here is to be able to take a decision rapidly on your market sense. And this is something you will build over time, but it's also a gut feeling. And if your gut feeling directs you to the wrong side of the equation, you might not be able to funnel the information appropriately. So this is kind of one of the quality you need to have to be able to dissect, retain what you think is relevant, and apply it to today's context. History always repeats itself. The times that it evolves may change. But the fact that you have, you know, a lot of years of experience may help. But if you are curious and cultivated, you always have something interesting to share. And again, the goal here is not necessarily to be right all the time, but if you force your client to think and think outside the box, you'll be rewarded for that.
Perfect. Thank you. So I want to continue with this line of questioning and go into market questions. What is your current view on equity markets right now and going forward? We've heard a lot of talk about the fear from the yields and how that's been behaving. So I do want to get your opinion on this.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're bringing good points. First, we've seen such a phenomenal round of activities over the last 12 months in this market. What I would say is this COVID or this pandemic accelerated the cycle. So we fell into a recession and all the stimulus package that we've seen from different level of government made it much easier to escape from. So we had what we call a V-shaped recovery in the economy. We lost so many jobs a year ago that we've recovered, you know, most of them today. And companies were able to downsize some of their activities, to be even more profitable down the road as the economy is picking up. And as you mentioned, because the economy is picking up, because we have faith in a vaccine, because, you know, we probably have herd immunity by maybe next fall, you know, people are confident that, you know, travel will be back. No, we'll be, I'm not saying we're going to be working from the office full time in the future, right? Because, you know, COVID accelerated some of the structural changes we've seen. That's why we've seen some technology names emerging from this pandemic. But what I'm saying out there is that the context is actually quite positive when you look at this recovery. And whenever the economy is booming, usually you want to be careful about inflation. And it's at that point that you may start raising interest rates. And this is the firm view here that interest rates will go up. They will not go up right away because we're still in that recovery mode, but you have to be careful. And because the stock market is a leading indicator, okay, the market will try to prevent what's going to happen. So as an example, the house view is whenever interest rates are going up, and this is what we're discounting, not in the near future, but in a, I'd say, and it may be 18 to 20 months, okay? You want to position yourself ahead. So you want to play stocks that are correlated to an interest rate or rates or an environment where rates are going up. Cyclicals, as an example, is a good example. Banks are another good example. But you also want to position yourself for a reopening economy. As an example, nobody is allowed to travel, or it's difficult to travel these days. Lodging, entertainment. There's a bunch of other stocks out there that you could consider that will benefit from the reopening economy that we haven't seen yet. And there's other stocks out there, which I believe may be overrated. DoorDash, as an example, okay? You know, we've been delivering food at our house, but once you'll be able to go to restaurants, will they still be able to actually get that same amount of activities? Margins are quite thin, okay? So these are conceptual stocks that I'd be careful down the road. But in this present time, I think we're going to be going to the next few years, like a post-war era, where there'll be booming activities, and that could be quite positive for the stock markets.
Continuing with this idea, given the current economic environment, how do you analyze the market and develop investment ideas based on market trends to present to clients, to present it to clients in hopes of selling them that strategy?
Yeah, so this is a mixed bag of different stuff that you guys learn in school, okay? So different clients will look at stocks or the stock market different ways, okay? There's different perspective, fundamental analysis, quantitative analysis, technical analysis. I tend to try to mix all of these. And when I have as many buy signal, the more conviction I will have regarding a certain stock or situation. My personal view, I'm more of a top-down person than a bottom-up. So I like to look at the overall macro. Are we seeing a recovery of the economy? Okay, what could be the main driver? And then I'll drill down into the company and try to differentiate. Okay, do they have barrier to entries? Will they be able to improve their margins? And then I'll look at valuations. Okay, quite often the rule of thumb is you want a company that will grow, okay, fast, and they will use the growth rate of their EPS and compare that to their market multiple. So if a company is growing at 20% and it's trading then less than 20 times earnings, maybe it's a good investment. So we'll try to find ideas where it could be supported by valuations. I must say, in a recovery, the market tends to overshoot in terms of market multiple. And that's what we've seen with certain stocks. Some stocks are very expensive today. So you have to be careful and pick the right ones in the context of where we sit in this recovery. And as you mentioned earlier on, inflation, with interest rates going up, okay, it's going to be we have to be careful, because in the past, with interest rates being so low, you had no other alternatives. But if interest rates are going up, people may want to move away from equity into other asset classes. So more or less, when you look at this, it's a mixed bag of everything, technical, as I said, fundamental, as well as quantitative perspectives.
So I want to deviate just one more time and ask about the concept of building trust when you're with your clients, when perhaps you have a contradicting view to the economy. There's a lot of very, very optimistic, bullish financiers that say the economy is great. How do you use that trust that you have with your clients to perhaps have a different view from what the consensus is?
Very important to have a different view sometimes, because if you always acknowledge with your client said, I'm wasting my time. He always agreed with me. But if you could debate, okay, that perspective with your client, that what's create a discussion, and it helps your client making sure he's aware of the pros and cons. And but you have to be able to support your arguments with interesting facts. And that's why Morgan Stanley, being one of the largest global equity platform in the world with one of the best research analysts out there. Now, it's not all about me. I use a lot of the information they provide, but I sometimes disagree with my analysts as well. And that's what makes a market. That's why you need the buyers and the sellers, okay? But you need to be able to argue with them and have facts that prove the concept of your theory out there. And even though you might be, you might have a different view than your client will appreciate that you're able to challenge him. And that's what down the road will being that relate will build that relationship with your client. And once again, keep in mind the retention span is quite low, because you might drill into a company deeper and deeper and never take actions, and you will lose the opportunity to invest in that stock. So at a certain point, you need to be able to say, okay, I've got enough information that I can move on and decide if I want to buy or sell this particular stock. And as you just mentioned, over time, if you're able to get those very clever discussion with clients, they will want to spend more time with you. And that's how you're going to be actually taking a step ahead your competition out there.
Fantastic. So I want to move more towards guidance questions. And one of the questions that I'm interested in asking you is, to what skill and or value do you attribute most of your success?
Listen, as I mentioned earlier on, you have to be curious. Make sure you have an interesting roadmap. You can challenge. You'll never be able to know everything out there, but if you have an opinion on it, you know, at least, and you case you can base your opinion on something, okay, it'll make your argument much more powerful. So in that context, okay, if you're a hard worker, if you love what you love, what you do, okay, you'll be actually much more efficient than if you come in the office and you say, oh, not another day at work, okay? In this particular environment, the stock market, there's so much you need to know that you'll never be able to know everything. But if you know a little bit of everything, okay, you will be doing a good, you know, you'll be successful in this business. And that's why it comes down to being cultivated, to be curious. Hardworking always help because there's so much to do, okay? Be humble as well. Never bullshit. Because the day you start bullshitting and you're wrong, your credibility is going to go down the drain. So be honest. If you don't know the answer, say, listen, I don't know, but let me try to get the answer for you. I'm sure I have somebody within my team who could probably respond to you. So these are all kind of the qualities I think you need to have to be successful in this business. And keep in mind, my boss is not my boss. Down the road, my clients are my boss. And if they value my work, I always have a job in this environment.
What can individuals looking to break an institutional equity sales pardon do during their university years to increase their chances at getting their foot through the door?
Yeah, a few things. For sure, you know, grades, we'll look at grades, we'll look at, you know, where you have studied, which space. But you know what, I'll give you an example. After my first year of university, they sent me a letter that if I don't improve my grades, I'll be kicked out. Okay. Things improve afterwards. But grades, it's not all about the grades. Okay. So you need, as I said, to differentiate yourself. For sure, you know what? CFA is important for finance these days. If down the road you want to manage a team, you may want to add an MBA to it. Okay. But you know, there's, you know, courses you could do to tag along. Okay. But as I said, grades are not the most important thing. If you, as an example, part of your class, there's a student investment fund. Okay. We like to look at these things, that it shows that you have an appetite for the market. Let's say there's limited spot and you were not picked up for the student managed or investment fund. Maybe if you manage your own tax savings account, okay, that's a good example, because when I'll have a discussion with you, I could feel that, you know, you have some market sense. So these are little things. But more importantly, as I mentioned in the beginning, get involved. No, be open-minded about what's going on. Don't be afraid to fail. Try different things out there. They will always serve, okay? It will bring down expertise. And ask questions out there. You know, we always like to be surrounded with people that are curious. Work your network, okay? As I said earlier on, I applied to different jobs offering out there. Not much luck. It's through my network that was able to enter Deloitte Touche. So that's important. So the network, never underestimate your network. And get out of the beaten path, okay? Because that's what will make you different than the others. You know, when I look at the resume as an example, you know, the most important thing to me is other interests. I want to see what else you have been doing. If you've been devoting 100% of your time to your studies, you may not have a balanced life. And if you don't have a balanced life, maybe if I hire you, you're not going to last long. So I'm looking for people that are, you know, bring a certain equilibrium in what they do. So that would be kind of my advice to breaking into the business.
You talked about the importance of networking and building a network. So I do want to ask about what is the best advice you could give to students now as they try to build their network during, you know, remote connection, during a pandemic where you can't go on your coffee chat? What is the best advice you can give them to help them grow their network?
There's different ways to get involved here, okay? So as I mentioned, I wasn't that busy at Deloitte Touche. I offer my help to the Jeune Chambre de Commerce de Montréal. I always got involved in sports. If it wasn't through competing, it was because I was coaching. So I was surrounded of new people. As an example, I did a lot of charity stuff. I was a trainer for MIRA, a CNI dog organization. I trained 5 different dogs. So you get in touch with people this way. And it might not be finance related, but there will be people sitting on the board of, let's say, a nonprofit organization who will be able to help you down the road. So that's why don't necessarily think that you need to be surrounded of finance people to get a job necessarily in finance, but by all the things you do, you will find a person who will be able to help. And I agree with the pandemic is not that easy, but there's still a lot of stuff being done online. Charity organization needs help to organize, you know, virtual events, okay? And as an example, with the Jeune Chambre de Commerce de Montréal and Le Cercle Finance de Montréal, which I was involved with, you need to reach out to corporates so they can do virtual presentations. Again, it's a good segue to get into these CEOs or CFOs. So these are little things that you could do. It doesn't have to be finance related, as I said. It could be sports related. It could be charitable. It could be cultural. So, but don't hesitate. Whenever you see something that interests you, knock at the door.
Fantastic. So final question before we go to our closing remarks, what is the single best piece of advice you can give to someone in their 20s?
Yeah. You know, market related, I could always joke, buy low and sell high, but let's move aside. You wanted to do what you love. If you don't do that, you're not going to be successful. And if you do what you love, you'll be 10 times more successful. You know what? You'll feel way more fulfilled in what you do. You'll be way more productive. You know, your job is not just a source of income. Okay. So if you're passionate about the stock market, you know, you'll know about it. And it doesn't mean you need to be a good investor. Okay. You could love the stock market, you read about it, and you'll be a great salesperson. Okay. But in this environment, you need to learn to sell yourself. But it's so easy to sell yourself when you do what you love. So I would say that would be my main advice to give. And you know what? People around you will feel it and they will want to be surrounded by you.
Wonderful. So is there anything else you'd like to suggest or mention as we wrap up? Any final advice for our audience?
Yeah, I have a few for you, Maura. First, you know, it's important to have goals in life, okay? Have some career objectives. And they may change, okay? But try to fix yourself a career plan. Never stop learning. I think it's, even though you're done with your studies, okay, it could be through different ways, okay? But don't be afraid to put yourself in a position where it's the unknown, okay? As I mentioned throughout my presentation, get involved, build your network. It opens doors, and that's very important. I'll give you a quick example. As a summer job, I was selling T-shirt at the Valley Field Regatta, okay? Kind of fun, it's out there, okay? Nothing rewarding about selling T-shirts. 10 years later, as I started in the business, okay, I kind of talked to a PM, pick up the phone. He's the largest portfolio manager in Montreal, working for Caisse de dépôt, okay? And we kind of talk about, you know, what I've done in the past. It happens that this guy is highly involved in the Valley Field Regatta. And he comes to me and said, I want you to cover me in the future. So, you know, I was early, not much experience, okay? And I got this big portfolio manager asking me to cover him. You know what? That's why when you get involved and you got stories to tell, you never know where it's going to end up. But you know what? Interpersonal skills are important, so work on them, okay? And I know with the pandemic, it's not easy to have those eye contact or shake hands, and who knows who will be shaking hands in the future. but you know what? It's important to learn to sell yourself. It all comes down to selling yourself. Have a balanced life. You'll last way longer in your job. Now, keep in mind, we always want to rush to find a job after we graduate, but you'll be sitting in that seat maybe for the next 40, 50 years. There's no rush, okay? So if you want to travel in between, please do so. Wellington, which is large Boston pension fund manager, you know, after 10 years, sometimes they force their employees to take a year off and give back to a charity organization or go and travel the world. So I think it's important that, you know, you stay open-minded and not say, okay, the next 50 years will be devoted to that simple task. And down the road, you'll enjoy life. And as I mentioned, you'll be a successful person and you will feel fulfilled.
Fantastic conversation. Wonderful to have you with us today. It has been an absolute pleasure and a great conversation. So thank you.
My pleasure, Maura. And thanks for the initiative.
That was my conversation with Charles Huo. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. Remember that this podcast is powered by the McGill Investment Club. As always, remember to stay safe and stay tuned. There is always more coming up.